some think chemical plants when they look ahead to the future of Ohio river towns. Others think kayaking.
Outdoor recreation, art, food diversity, cultural diversity. Those are the things that will be the identifying factors going forward in these communities.
I'm Carol Holzapfel. This week on the Allegheny Front, finding the sweet spot for development along the Ohio. And the EPA has a new top 10 list of chemicals to study.
They were selected because of known hazards associated with them.
They're looking at you, asbestos. Plus, another federal agency will decide how much more already decimated bat populations can take. Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. It's not opposites day, but the Environmental Protection Agency now says hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas can impact water supplies. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports this conclusion is a reversal from a previous report.
When the EPA released its long-awaited draft report on fracking in June of 2015, the headline conclusion reported fracking did not cause, quote, widespread systemic impacts on drinking water. The report was cheered by the natural gas industry and spurned by environmentalists. EPA's own scientific review board criticized the conclusion, saying it did not hold up to the science reflected in the body of the report. Now, the EPA has changed its headline in the final report, saying that fracking for natural gas and oil can impact drinking water supplies under, quote, some circumstances. This time, industry is criticizing the report, and environmentalists are praising it. The EPA says poor well construction, wastewater spills, and wastewater storage in unlined pits can lead to water pollution. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
As towns large and small along the Ohio River try to attract more industry and create jobs, many are asking, is there room for river recreation? You know, the fun stuff like kayaking, fishing, and swimming. Glynis Board takes a look at how the region can balance seemingly opposite uses.
Business has been picking up in recent years for Tim Redinger. He owns a bait shop in Bridgewater, just north of Pittsburgh, along the Ohio River.
I want to show you something. Can you see that right there?
With a fishing rod in one hand, Redinger points from the bank to a nearby eddy in the river.
Those are baby shad, probably not a couple months old.
You can see a few industrial sites from Redinger's fishing spot, but he says it's nothing like it used to be when he was a kid 50 years ago.
That mountainside over there was orange at night. I mean, orange from all the blast furnaces and stuff rolling. Hey, it was dump city. Back then, no one cared.
But over time, many mills closed down, and the Clean Water Act limited pollution from those that remained. Redinger remembers it was more than a decade ago when the shad started showing up.
It tells you how good the water is. Say boo to them, they fall over dead. They will not live in contaminated water, anything whatsoever. And that, look at that, they're all through here.
The decline of industry was pretty devastating to the region's economy. Redinger says, the flip side though, more people are hanging out on the river here, and that's true in Pittsburgh too.
Let's go, Pitt! Let's go, Pitt! Let's go, Pitt!
Guy Harrell, you're getting trucked out. Rocky Valley hit two. Mark, you're through.
This is sound from the head of the Ohio, a fall regatta in Pittsburgh. It's just one of the many recreational activities on the river these days.
We've been working to make the riverfront accessible to everyone and really exciting cultural places for the city.
Nina Chase is an urban designer with a nonprofit called Riverlife. They've overseen development of a system of parks and trails along the riverfronts in Pittsburgh, but it hasn't been cheap. Chase says the $130 million spent is worth it.
That $130 million of investment has actually triggered $4.1 billion in investment in riverfront and adjacent riverfront development projects downtown.
Now Riverlife is trying to bring Pittsburgh's recreational vision downstream to smaller communities. They recently received a grant from the Benedum Foundation, which, by the way, also funded this series of radio stories. Chase says Riverlife is trying to encourage a culture of recreation all along the Ohio River. And they aren't alone. Tom Way has been trying to lead his downstream city of Steubenville, Ohio, in this same direction. Standing by the river, Wei says many towns like his are still struggling economically from the downturn in the steel and coal industries. They're trying to figure out what's next.
As the communities search for identities, there's opportunity for growth and direction in areas of outdoor recreation, art, food diversity, cultural diversity.
A few years ago, he founded the Urban Frontier Organization to promote this type of creative economic development in the Upper Ohio Valley. His goal is to reactivate forgotten or neglected assets, including the river itself. One thing he's pushing, water sports.
We're working on a project now to bring non-motorized watercraft rentals and adaptive paddling to the region.
Now, by adaptive paddling, he means kayaks, canoes, and rafts. Cheap ways to get people enjoying the river. And there are other projects like this along the Ohio River. But can recreation and tourism really be an economic driver? There is not a lot of research on the economic impacts of river recreation in the Ohio Valley. But further downstream, on the Mississippi River in Iowa, nature-based recreation is one of the state's largest industries. Rivergoers spend $1.5 billion a year there. But the Ohio River still has the stigma as one of the dirtiest waterways in the country. And more towns are interested in rebuilding it around industry, not recreation. Shell is building a new ethane cracker in Beaver, Pennsylvania, and two other cracker plants are being considered in the region. New spin-off industries are already gearing up. RiverLife's Nina Chase says, just as in Pittsburgh, though, there's room on the river for industry and recreation. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
You have to be creative with land use and points of access that you can have both and you can have them work well.
Back on the river in Bridgewater, PA, bait shop owner Tim Redinger is banking on it. He's only a few miles downstream from where Shell's ethane cracker is being constructed. But when he looks at the baby shad in the water, he smiles at how clean the water has become.
That's a great sign. You see that? Life is good.
With West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board, reporting for the Allegheny Front.
That story was produced for our Headwater series about the Ohio River, its past, and its possibilities for the future. As part of the series, reporters with the Allegheny Front and West Virginia Public Broadcasting decided to check out riverfronts in the Headwaters region to see what kinds of projects are in the works or what people would like to see. And we'll hear a few of those in our show today, starting with me. I'm Kara Holsapple, and I'm standing behind a car dealership north of Pittsburgh across the Ohio River from Neville Island, the former site of the Shenango Coke Works. They shut the plant down earlier this year, and I'm here with Leah Andrasik, a local environmental activist, to talk about what she'd like to see for the future of the site.
Right now, our group, ACAN, Allegheny County Clean Air Now, is petitioning to put a solar farm over there. DTE Energy is the owner of the site, and they're based in Michigan. They're a utility company, but they also have other investments. One of those is solar. So we're hoping that that's something that they'd be interested in placing on that site, and it would be the first one in the Pittsburgh area. It's basically just a large portion of land with a lot of solar panels on it. One of the recent ones that they put in Michigan will be enough to power 9,000 homes.
Do you feel hopeful that that might happen?
Well, I'm an eternal optimist, so I do feel hopeful, but we are concerned. If the cracker plant goes in Beaver County, that would open up a whole host of different industry that would be, they call it downriver industry. They will be making polyethylene pellets to sell to plastics manufacturers. We're concerned that one of those types of polluting industries could go into that spot. Pittsburgh, I think, for probably the past 20 or 30 years, has been trying to redefine itself as a clean and green city. Redefine ourselves from being the smoky city, and that would just go one step further in saying we want to choose development that's not going to impact the health of our citizens and that's not going to impact the environment.
I'm Glynis Board in Chester, West Virginia, literally a stone's throw from the Ohio River, where the first phase of development of a new industrial park is underway. I'm here with Patrick Ford, the executive director of the Business Development Corporation of West Virginia's Northern Panhandle. He's showing me this site, the former Taylor Smith and Taylor Pottery Plant. It's one of several old industrial sites being repurposed in this area.
5 years ago, what was here, just the remnant and the skeleton of an 80,000 square foot building in disrepair, and it was just vacant, graffiti, weeds, glass, and the community lived in the shadow of this for 30 years. We kept being overlooked for economic development decisions that were being made by national and international companies to want to locate in the Northern Panhandle because we simply did not have sites to meet the demand that was emerging in the area. And all of the developable land just happened to be all of these abandoned mills. And you can't drive 10 miles in the Ohio River Valley without seeing an abandoned mill. We picked the toughest of all of them in the Ohio River Valley. I don't know why we did that. Maybe I'm not that smart. But what I am is I believe in the future of this area. The building has been completely torn down. We went down and remediated the lead from the soil. So now you're walking on fresh soil here. The lead shards from the pottery that didn't make it to the store was literally thrown over the fence for decades, generations. So we had to remediate all of those lead shards from the riverbank. We were also responsible for the river. So we actually were out there dredging the lead out of the river. You just go back as early as 10 years ago, there were no shovels in the ground in the Ohio River. Drive today from Chester all the way down to Beach Bottom, you're going to see buildings being erected, shovels in the ground, and earth-moving equipment everywhere.
This is Ann Lee, and I'm at the Riverfront Park in Morgantown, West Virginia. It's along the Mon River in the headwaters of the Ohio. Now, much of Morgantown's riverfront is undeveloped, but near where I'm standing, there are trails, restaurants, and a hotel. I'm here with John Lichter, and he's pushing for something new, a whitewater rafting park. So, John, tell me a little bit about your project. What is it?
Okay, this is the Monongahela River. It's extremely large, wide, powerful. We're looking at diverting the Monongahela River into a separate channel that will run parallel. And the most water we would be using would be in the neighborhood of maybe 10% of what's running right now. It's a new concept where instead of changing the dam or working in the general channel of the river, we bypass the lock, the dam, and perhaps the hydroelectric project. And we realize we can do it right beside the Monongahela River in the park. We're not creating a amusement park. We're creating or recreating a natural river. It's obviously attractive to look at. It's an enhancement to the bike trail. And they're finding in places like Boise, Idaho, that it attracts surfers. It attracts people with stand-up paddle boards, even boogie boards. A person could take a break from work. They could go out in the morning, go out in the evening, and enjoy the rapids, which we know was once here. West Virginia, it's the whitewater capital of the world. We're very confident that the river's clean enough, and we're also confident that by getting in the river, it will help people to realize what a resource they have and take care of it.
That was Ann Lee and Glynis Board of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and me, Kara Holsapple. This is the Allegheny Front. Shell is moving closer to building a multi-billion dollar chemical plant in Beaver County along the Ohio River. This week, the plant was the subject of a pair of public hearings on how it would impact everything from local traffic to air quality. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier was there.
At the first of two public hearings this week, Shell officials described the local impact their plant would have on the township where it will be built. Shell spokesman Michael Marr said the cracker would create fewer odors in Potter Township than similar plants elsewhere. Those plants make plastic out of crude oil, which contains a higher sulfur content than the natural gas the Beaver County plant will use.
people hear about a petrochemical plant and they want to ask questions about odor. I think it's different, very different, from a facility where crude oil is present as the feedstock.
The cracker would create 6,000 construction jobs and 600 permanent ones. That has local labor and business leaders excited, but environmental advocates worry about pollution. Because the Pittsburgh region doesn't meet federal air standards, Shell needs to buy air pollution credits for three types of pollutants. These credits come from other plants nearby that have closed down. One problem, though, it can't find enough credits for one type of pollution, volatile organic compounds, or VOCs. So it's offering the State Department of Environmental Protection a trade. Shell will get more credits for other types of pollution in exchange for a smaller bill, so to speak, on its VOCs. At a DEP hearing, Mark Dixon, a Pittsburgh filmmaker and activist, said he doesn't like this idea.
Especially considering that we don't even meet federal air quality standards today. What gall.
But as long as federal regulators sign off on it, the DEP says the move is legal. Shell is also asking DEP to modify a water pollution permit first obtained by the site's original predecessor. Activists say that allows Shell to pollute more. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
So during this week's meetings about permits for Shell's planned ethane cracker, we've heard from activists voicing their concerns, and some who welcome the plant for its promises of an economic boost for the region. Julie Grant brings us this perspective about riverfront development that could follow the cracker plant.
I recently met with Dan Adamski, who's managing director of Jones Lang LaSalle, the international real estate firm that represented Shell, at their new 18-story tower on Forbes Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh.
So how did you help them find this site? Like, why did they pick this site, do you think?
Primarily because of what's underneath us, the Marcellus Shale. So they like the location on the river, a lot of the equipment and the materials they're going to have to bring in to construct the plant. You know, it's over $4 billion. It's very large, and you can't ship it by rail or by road. They're going to ship a lot of materials up the Mississippi, then up the Ohio River. So this was a former Horsehead zinc plant. It was a site that Shell is having to remediate for their own use. And it would have become a brownfield site had not Shell gone there.
Now that the cracker plant's officially announced, what's happening with real estate in this area?
I think it'll unfold more slowly than people anticipate. A lot of folks thought that once the announcement was made, there was going to be a tidal wave of development. It's going to be a rising tide, but at the same time, we don't think it's going to be a tidal wave.
It sounds like you kind of think that this is a benefit, like it's getting brownfields cleaned up as compared with maybe they would just be sitting there otherwise.
For better or worse, our brownfield sites are located along rivers because that's where the previous generation of industry occurred. So a lot of this industry that we anticipate coming, the brownfield sites that do exist out there make perfect sense that that's where they would go. So the Ohio River, I think, will benefit from all this because people want to be near the rivers, either for industry or because the supporting workers now want to be on the river. The river quality is very important because, frankly, you're selling the river, whether it's an office building or it's residential. They're going to that location, and oftentimes you're paying a premium because it's more expensive to develop along the river. No one wants to look out their window and see a dirty river.
Dan Adamski is managing director of JLL Real Estate in downtown Pittsburgh. He spoke with Julie Grant as part of the Allegheny Front series, Headwaters, exploring the Ohio River's vast water resources. We're producing Headwaters with West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Check out all of the stories, interviews, and a video at alleghenyfront.org/headwaters. They say sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. These days, it's more like you can't hear the birds for the trucks. Next week on the Allegheny Front, how scientists are trying to preserve a natural resource, nature's soundscape. Listen for that and some of our other favorite stories from the past year. If you can't tune in, it will be right there waiting for you at alleghenyfront.org. A coalition of 9 oil and gas companies is asking the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for a 50-year incidental take permit under the Endangered Species Act. It would allow the disruption of 5 bat species in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. It's called an incidental take permit because the impacts are incidental to carrying out legal activity. The permit would include the endangered Indiana bat and the threatened northern long-eared bat. Don Hopi reported about this for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Don, what does take really mean?
Take means killing a portion of the population. For example, in Pennsylvania and other places where there are wind turbines usually have to get take permits because there are a certain number of bats or birds, sometimes endangered species or threatened species, are impacted by those wind turbines. They fly into the turbines and die.
The coalition of oil and gas companies is applying for a 50-year incidental take permit, which seems like a long time. Why so long?
Companies want to have the permit so it covers the length of time that their installations will be operative. The wells can last that long, the compressor stations, and certainly the pipelines.
And how is this permit different from how oil and gas companies are dealing with endangered species and wildlife now?
Well, I'm not so sure it's different in a lot of ways, but what it is, it's bigger and longer than any other permit that has been requested by the oil and gas industry or any industry east of the Mississippi.
It covers the entirety of Pennsylvania, the entirety of Ohio.
That's correct. That's what the companies have asked for. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has indicated that it will endeavor to narrow the scope of the permit to the areas where oil and gas development actually is occurring.
The permit, if granted, would allow oil and gas companies to disturb forested habitat for bats, which have already seen sharp population declines because of white nose syndrome. Who is concerned about this proposal? What are conservationists saying?
One of the bat species is already endangered. Another is threatened. Another is under study for listing. And all of those have had double-digit declines due to the white nose syndrome. And environmental groups are concerned that this permit will allow additional deaths in the bat community and therefore impact populations that are already pretty bad off.
What kinds of efforts would oil and gas companies have to take to avoid unnecessarily taking bats or mitigating the impacts of their industry on the bats?
Well, as part of this take permit, they have to put together a habitat conservation plan. In conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they would try to set parameters on when they could go through certain areas. If they know that there is, for instance, a bat maternity colony or a hibernaculum where bats are overwintering or roosting areas where bats would be in the trees, they would not be allowed to cut those trees during those periods of the year when the bats are using them. So it can provide some broad area coordination for how the bats are treated by the oil and gas development companies. It also makes it easier for the companies to move through the areas quickly, and that could harm the bats.
Because they don't have to go project by project. They would just sort of have this understanding with the Fish and Wildlife Service about what they could do.
Correct. There aren't holdups because of different review restrictions, times when the Fish and Wildlife Service might have to look at various things. Those delays are taken out of the permitting process, and it's much more sure for them. Conservation organizations, environmental groups, would probably say that doing it on a case-by-case basis, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would be aware of the other permits and so could coordinate them just fine doing it that way. The problem with doing this plan for 50 years and 3 states is we don't know what the industry is going to look like 20 years down the road or 40 years or 50 years down the road. We didn't know what the oil and gas industry has changed considerably in the last 20 years to allow shale gas drilling. It's a great unknown out there technologically, I think.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Don Hopi reports on the environment for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Public comments are being taken by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service until December 27th on this initial phase of the permitting process. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. Environmental Protection Agency recently put out a list of 10 high-priority chemicals. These are the first chemicals the agency will review for risks to human health under a new law that Congress passed this summer. Rebecca Williams has more.
The law is an overhaul of the nation's chemical safety regulations. It's called the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA. It covers chemicals in all kinds of consumer products, things like furniture and cleaning products. It doesn't cover food, drugs, cosmetics, or pesticides. Those come under other regulations. Jim Jones is with the EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention.
The old law put us in the position of if we saw something that gave us concern, we could stop its entry into the market. It was somewhat of a defensive posture.
He says the previous law was much weaker, and it limited EPA's authority to restrict chemicals that aren't safe.
The new law requires us to make an affirmative finding that it is safe to go onto the market, which is a very different kind of finding.
So now, he says EPA is conducting safety reviews of chemicals already on the market. These first 10 chemicals come from a list of 90 chemicals EPA considers a priority to study first.
They were selected because of known hazards and known exposures associated with them.
Jones says now, if they find a chemical poses an unreasonable risk, EPA can do something about it.
We would have the authority to eliminate that unreasonable risk, which could include a ban or could include some other restriction.
Under the new law, EPA has to take action on a chemical it finds to be unsafe within 2 years. The American Chemistry Council did not make anyone available for a taped interview for this story. But in an email statement, the group says a chemical's inclusion in this first group of 10 chemicals does not in and of itself indicate anything about the safety of the chemical. Environmental groups say these first 10 chemicals are a good place to start. Rebecca Munich is the deputy director of the Ecology Center. It's an environmental group that pushed for updates to the chemical safety law for decades. She says the new law gives EPA more power to regulate chemicals that are shown to cause harm, like asbestos. Asbestos is on this list of chemicals EPA will review first. There were attempts to ban asbestos in the 1990s because it's a known human carcinogen, and it's known to cause mesothelioma.
But EPA couldn't ban all uses of asbestos under previous TSCA. Now, they are looking at asbestos again, and we're hopeful that they can really slam the door on this nasty chemical and get it out of commerce.
Munich says the new law makes it easier for the EPA to do risk assessments, evaluating potential risks of chemicals.
There's no cost-benefit analysis, I guess is the best way to explain it. So the hazard is high enough, the risk is high enough after the risk assessment for a chemical like asbestos, they can ban it, whereas that was not possible previously.
And that's a huge change.
It puts health in the forefront and not the economic question in terms of regulating chemicals.
She says EPA should also be able to tackle these safety reviews faster than it could before the law changed. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Rebecca Williams.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. Julie Grand is the managing editor for our Headwater series. I'm Carol Holsapple. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any of our programs. You can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher, or go to our website for links, AlleghenyFront.org.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, the Laurel Foundation, the Catherine Mabus McKenna Foundation, PNC Charitable Trusts, and the Benedum Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of energy and conservation. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between public radio stations WITF in Harrisburg and WHYY in Philadelphia, covering the Commonwealth's energy economy.